got a tremendous commuter to you, so I just need you to find us on the way back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Patricia Ellis. I'm a member of the Committee of Tourism, and I'm deployed here by the ANC.
Oh, you're not from the Northern Cape today.
Thank you very much. Good day, everyone. I'm Kemba Mkhep, a South African. Thank you very much.
Nancy, at your corner.
My name is Nancy.
Nancy, we're all using the mic. If you can tell me.
Good afternoon, everybody. Ismail Hussain from PMG.
Did you mind me to introduce yourself at the end? On.
George Pillay, representative of the Auditor General.
Good afternoon. My name is Polane Sobambela, a representative from the Auditor General.
Afternoon, everybody. I'm Charlie Zigote from the Office of the Auditor General.
Good afternoon. I'm Khalid Daoud. I'm from the Financial Corporation.
Good afternoon. I'm Sasha Peters from the FSC.
Good afternoon. My name is Ramos Mabugu. I am with the Financial and Fiscal Commission.
Good afternoon. I'm Bobby Dara from the FSC also.
Anybody?
Thank you, Chair. Greetings to everybody. My name is Simpiwe Begwa from KZN. I'm a member of this committee. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Bunkin Tuli, and I'm the researcher for the committee. Good afternoon, once again, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members, and the colleagues. The presentation that we're going to make today, basically we had two documents, Honorable Chair. The other one is for slides and the other one is for notes. In some of the slides, Honorable Chair, I was referring maybe to the page numbers of the previous document in terms of where it's a web document that we send with the slides, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I will start with our reputation promises, the Auditor General, that we've got a constitutional mandate and the Supreme Auditor of South Africa. It exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in the public sector, through auditing, thereby building public confidence. And I want to touch on our role as the Auditor General on the digital art process, which is to reflect on our audit work that we perform to assist the portfolio committee in its role in assessing the performance of the entities, as well as the department, to consider the objectives of the commitment to produce the digital art document. Honorable Chair, if I can go to page 5 of the slide. I just want to spend like a minute or so in this slide just to emphasize in terms of, as the Auditor General, in terms of the type of audit opinion that we issue. You'll see in the screen there, Honorable Chair, that we've got unqualified audit opinion with no finding. Normally that one is classified as a clean audit. And we'll say there in the bullet, we'll say that these auditees, they produce credible and reliable financial statements that are free of material misstatements and reported in a useful and reliable manner on its government information, and have observed or complied with the key applicable legislation to actually ensure them that they comply with the legislation. And we'll say the yellow there, on the yellow side, then, that if anything other than one that we didn't mention in this other side, meaning that they are struggling to actually ensure them that our financial statements compliance with legislation, as well as their performance information is not useful and also is not reliable. Another thing, I'm going to go to slide number 8. Slide number 8 is giving a picture in terms of how the portfolio is performing in terms of the audit outcome. And we'd say there that the portfolio is improved. The department in the previous year, Honorable Chair, didn't get a clean audit opinion. You would say there that there was a 50%, which is yellow. And you would say the letters there, the yellow means then that the department in the previous year had unqualified audit opinion with findings, specifically on compliance with legislation. And they have since improved from that. And the improvement is attributable then to the good practices then that the department has put in place. In terms of, you say there that you've listed in terms of what is it that you've observed, in terms of the ethical behavior, what you've spent, the commitment to good practices and governance, and also the good human resource practices then that they managed to actually ensure then that to ensure that there's sufficiently skilled officials that are preparing this financial statement and this annual report as well. For them, and the basic disciplines of government information, of control, and market processes of transactions as well. And slide number 9 is the picture there is also a continuation of what we were talking about in the previous slide in terms of the status of key controls. And you would say that the status of key controls as well is actually painting the picture then that in terms of financial management that the department has implemented. And the status of the key control as well has improved due to the portfolio implementing then the action plan then in terms of ensuring then that the audit recommendations that we recommended in the prior year, they sustained. In the case of the entities that they sustained, as well as the department has actually improved then, and also they strengthened then their financial reporting, as well as the related controls to actually ensure that they prevent the misstatements that from occurring. And the oversight was enhanced as well to actually ensure that they detect the misstatements, and also the discipline of proper record keeping to ensure then that there is proper record keeping. And also the information is supported then by reliable information and also the disclosure. On the right of the slide, they were talking about the assurance providers as well in terms of senior management. And the colors there is basically, I'm colorblind, but I think it's blue. The color there, which means then that all the level of assurances are providing assurance from the first level of assurance providers, senior management, accounting authority, and accounting officer, as well as the executive authority. And also the portfolio committee as well, which is very commendable in terms of ensuring then that they keep the department and the entity accountable by asking the relevant questions, of which is something that you can be commended on, as well as the portfolio committee on that. And in the norms, we've got, I think on page 9, there is a guidance in terms of how we do the assurance provider, as well as in terms of how we assess it. And it's something then that even going forward, then we're going to be discussing with the portfolio committee as well to ensure then that we keep on discussing in terms of these best practices and also how you can follow up in the department and the entity. The slide on the screen talks in terms of the quality of the annual performance report that we've seen. In terms of what is it then that we've audited on page 11, we say that in the department we selected 2 programs that we've tested on the usefulness as well as the reliability of the performance information that is there. For the department, we selected program 2, which is policy and knowledge services, as well as program 3, and we looked at the international tourism management. And then on the South African tourism, we looked at 4 strategic objectives. And then those ones, you would say there in the picture that it didn't identify any material findings that warranted us to actually elevate it to the auditor's report as well as material findings. And then this slide on page 13 is reflecting in terms of how the portfolio is performing in terms of expenditure management, which is then talks then to unauthorized irregular as well as fruitless with expenditure. And we'll say then that the portfolio is not doing bad there, because on fruitless and useless expenditure, there is 915,000 that was prepared this year. And the reason for that is I think there were late translations of flights and exchange of flights, and then there was care additional cost in terms of that. And for irregular expenditure, it's about 121,000. And also, that one is relating to, I think there were 3 quotations that were not obtained in the case of VAT. And also then for the case of the department, I think they were procuring a service from a social service provider, which it was not a social service provider, that one. And then it resulted to irregular expenditure. But you'll see then on the right-hand side, the 2 cycles. Which means then that there were investigations then that were done in terms of that, which then they followed the law in terms of when you identify irregular expenditure or fruitless expenditure, if that needs to be investigated, what happened, and then if then there are corrective measures then that need to be taken place, then those then should be taken place and should be done as well. And on page 8 of the briefing document as well, you'll see then we actually elaborated more on the attachment in terms of which specific entities in terms of irregular expenditure, as well as wasteful expenditure, which entities were impacted by this. And then this slide talks to the best practices. Then I've already touched on the best practices on my presentation. I started with the presentation in terms of what the best practices that the portfolio is following. I'm just going to touch on the key commitments then that we had with the minister. We had a meeting with the minister on the 13th of July, 2016. When we met with the minister, we were still having anticipated audit outcomes. The audit reports were not signed at that time because it was signed on the 21st of July. But we already saw at that time that there was an improvement in the portfolio. And we discussed with the minister the status of the implementation and of the commitments that we had previously with the minister, and also solicited some new commitments as well from them. And also the minister there requested that he would appreciate if we can continue having the quarterly key control discussions as well to ensure then that there's early warning as well, and also if there are any emerging risks that we identify, we discuss them earlier enough so that the department or the entity then can be able to take corrective action earlier. And you would say then the status of key controls there. For example, if the new commitment, which then talks to the monitoring of the marketing strategy that is adopted by FED, specifically the FED, to confirm whether the current joint marketing arrangement is feasible that the FED is currently doing to market the country, to get more tourists to come to South Africa, just to look in terms of that process, if that process is a feasible way of doing business. The commitment then that we requested from the minister in the previous year, the department was struggling to actually account for EPWP expenditure, especially the infrastructure expenditure. And there were discussions then and deliberations that we made to Treasury to ensure then that Treasury assists them to account for it. And this year then they got it right, hence then there's an improvement even in the audit outcome, of which is something then that is commended as well to work on that one. The commitment that is on the yellow is the commitment that is whereby we talk to the minister to provide feedback on the foreign currency impact on the operations, because FED has got operations outside the country, and also say then the rent depreciates, the volatility of the rent as well is an issue. Then it end up impacting them negatively on the FED, and also it depends whether maybe the rent is depreciated or also is appreciated as well. So it's something then that the minister should keep on the right. And on the far right is the proposed commitment then that we're requesting that from the portfolio committee as well to look for us. We just requested two commitments that we're proposing that maybe the committee might monitor for us in terms of regular engagement with the department as well as the entity for the implementation of action plan. Because the portfolio now is clean in terms of financial management, government information, compliance with legislation. But the question is, can they sustain that, the clean audit outcome? I think it's something then that needs to be debated as well and be elevated. And also, we've seen in the third party debate as well for 2017 that there were certain matters then that were discussed, were asked, and also we're proposing that the committee then consider the three bullets there that are there. If I may, I think the regular engagement with the role of the local government and municipalities in maintaining tourist attractions as well, which is then the strategy of the tourism. And the minister was asked in the debate as well to implement an interdepartmental task force to address the challenges of tourism. And also there was a concern as well that the budget is not sufficient to achieve the mandate of the portfolio, of which is something then that we're proposing then that it needs to be looked at as well. Honorable Chair, that was the presentation on the audit outcome. And I think if there are any questions, the questions then are welcome on the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. If you are not pressed for time, can FSC present so that we just bring questions to over?
Yes,
if you are pressed for time, then we can choose the questions.
We can do that another time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. What FFC is funding itself, we've got two more members that came in.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry for my apology for the name that I got lost. I went to another building and said, I'm coming in. I'm the guy that was on the commission.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to Honorable Members, ladies and gentlemen. I must start by thanking you for the invitation and to acknowledge that your invitation letter was the most challenging among the portfolio committee invitations that we received to assist with the BRRR. Report, because you asked for not just the usual budget analysis that we do, but also conceptual questions that take us out of our comfort zone. And so we had to dig quite deep into addressing some of your questions. We'll try to respond directly to the questions, to the issues that you outlined in the letter. So, for structuring the presentation, I will answer any questions on role and function of the Commission in discussion. I won't go into that detail in the interest of time, but we've got a slide that says what the Commission is all about. Then from the second area, tourism and national tourism sector strategy, in context of current economic climate. This will address your first two issues, which I said were the difficult ones. You asked us to say some comments around whether the national tourism sector strategy was still relevant and realistic in terms of its goals to 2020. And that took a bit of time, as I will explain, in coming up to what we think would be useful advice to the portfolio committee in that assessment. Then the second aspect was around adequacy of the budget for the department. And again, I will say something around that specific request. And the answer that I will volunteer to the portfolio committee will be informed by section 3, which will be departmental budget analysis over a 7-year period. So not just 1-year period snapshot. We do a 7-year analysis and an annual report analysis that begins to compare and contrast some of the issues that the Auditor General has been saying against the budget that's been allocated to the department. And then we'll just do some concluding remarks. And in terms of, Chair, where you started about calling us in the first quarter, that would be a good initiative. Our only concern at this moment is that first quarter, if it's the financial quarter, which means April, May, June, that period, the only new thing that we will have is one extra financial year added to the analysis that we are giving you today, as well as information on the APT for end of this current financial year. So those will be the two things that we'll have new in the first quarter for next financial year. but we can discuss offline the request that you made. So now, starting with the first aspect, and this was extremely difficult. So let me start by saying, to assess the NTSS, where to look at real performance over the previous period, 2005 to 2015, so that we establish some sort of a trend. So this picture is for the whole economy, to preface the presentation. And what you notice there is, on the first green graph, it gives you the overall economic performance over 2005 to 2015, and you see a gradual slowdown of the national economy from the first part. Then you see erratic patterns of agricultural growth in the second basic column there. Then the third set of columns on households, you see declining trends of household final consumption expenditures. Then for the tourism sector, the key point from real performance over the 2005 to 2015 period is in fact that it has been growing above the national economy over that average. And if you want to tout the tourism banner, you can say it's been propping up the economy. And one could even do an analysis that may say, had there been no tourism, maybe we would have slumped into a recession. That's what ex post analysis shows us, because tourism has been growing above the economy, pump priming or propping up the rest of the economy. Okay, now to be sure, with your first request that we are responding directly to it, this slide tells you what you know. And this is the National Tourism Sector Strategy target. And these are the targets that we looked into. Terms of arrival, 15 million foreign arrivals by 2020. In terms of gross domestic product, increased tourism contribution to GDP from 189.4 billion in 2009 to 499 billion in 2020. In terms of job creation, those targets. So this is what we are assessing. So your question was, are these still relevant as we go to 2020, and what can the Commission say to the Portfolio Committee around those targets at this midpoint? And we found that to be a fair request on the Commission, because when you look at our mandate, we are a tool for this Portfolio Committee. And at the request of the Portfolio Committee, you can request on us to do work to brief and advise you, as long as it's within our mandate. And we found that to be in our mandate. So this is what we'll give you our insights on. Now, overall assessment of the National Tourism Sector Strategy is, we think, is ambitious but realistic targets that are in there, and we think that's essential component for the tourism strategy. So it's ambitious, but we find a lot of realism. I'll come back to why we say that. The targets relate to what we think are fundamental objectives of tourism policy, explicitly concerned with issues of national wealth creation and regional distribution. So those are fundamental objectives that one can trace back even to national development plan. The targets are few in number, oftentimes you find other strategies with hundreds and hundreds of targets, but here you have few targets. And we think that maintains sharpness of focus in relation to key factors which determine performance of tourism. And it helps to capture the essence of contribution that the sector makes to national objectives. So it's a positive that there are few objectives, but there are few targets, but those targets are meaningful in that they speak directly to issues of national wealth creation and regional distribution. The targets, it's important to note that they are just that, they are targets, not focused. So they're not forecasting that by 2020 we will be on $499 billion. They are targeting $499 billion, but not forecasting to be there. It's important to distinguish between focus and targets. And what that tells us is that there are certain important assumptions about the future cost of underlying factors which affect tourism development that we then need to assess whether those assumptions are still realistic for us to get to their projection for 2020. So this figure is when one starts doing applying their telescopic faculties, trying to talk about a future while living in the present. And this is very, very complex world that we are in. But that's what we have to do. Why do we have to do that? We have to do that because this is 2016 and we are assessing 2020. So we've got no option but to telescope, use our telescopic faculties. So what we do is we build a model of the economy of South Africa with tourism as one of the sectors. And then we see if that model picks up South Africa closely for the last 10 years, 2005 to 2015, when we convince ourselves that that model we have built is a good laboratory, then we can do experiments or what we call simulations to say, what if we walk this model 2017, 2018, 2019, 2020 and onwards on the basis that we have been able to pick very closely 2005 to 2015, what would happen? That's what we are mainly basing our assessment on. And so these the graph there gives calibrated performance of South African economy now over a 10-year period. So we even open the horizon and do it for 10 periods going forward. And what we find is the gradual slowdown of the national economy, tourism continuing its growth above the national economy. I'll come back to that. Some increasing growth for agriculture, which in the past 10 years wasn't growing as much as it's focused now to grow. Again, declining trends of household final consumption expenditure, and that will be important for the targets around domestic arrivals or domestic trips that are in the plan. And then share of rural households in total expenditures stable at around 20%, and the strategy talks about going into rural areas. That looks at verifying if we are sitting on a credible model. So it compares real and calibrated average annual gross domestic product growth rate by industry with your tourism according to the definition sitting in the areas around your catering and accommodation, your areas around the services industries in there. And we find relatively good economy and sector-wide calibration of our thinking. Then what we do now is to say, when you look at most of the targets in the national tourism sector strategy, you can roughly approximate them by looking at relationships between industry growth and household final consumption, percent change in urban and rural household final consumption due to 1% annual increase of sector-specific total sector productivity. And we do this for each sector, including sectors that have elements of tourism in them. Now, what we find is the industry's growth impacting more rural than urban household final consumption, in other words, that are pro-rural, is food, beverages, and tobacco in the main, agriculture, forestry, and fishery, mining and quarrying industry, communication services, light manufacturing industry, financial and insurance, and business services. The industry's growth impacting more urban than rural households' final consumption, in other words, ones that are pro-urban, are your health and veterinary services, wholesale and retail services, heavy manufacturing, government services, surprisingly, community social and personal services, catering and accommodation, a pro-urban bias compared to rural. So what lessons can one draw from these simulations for the national tourism sector strategy? The main projection is for tourism to continue growing and encouraging overall growth to recover. And we think what one can draw from that is that the National Tourism Sector Strategy growth target on GDP is feasible. So that 2020 target at this midterm evaluation is not unfounded. There are merits or there are reasons why it's still feasible and still worthwhile keeping as a target for 2020 on the basis of the modeling that we have. Tourism growth has significant effect on national economic growth rate. And the implication there, as I said, is that tourism's contribution to overall GDP as set out in the National Tourism Sector Strategy may be, in terms of actual numbers, you can require to do more, but on the basis of the projection, still the target, or what's implied in the target, the objective of raising contribution of tourism in overall output or GDP is still worth keeping. And there are reasons to believe that even with current structures continuing going forward, the share of tourism in GDP is likely to increase. The average annual growth for tourism in the model works out to around 4.1% over the 10-year period that we spoke about. And that impacts positively the rest of the economy, including, importantly, revenue targets, which are in the National Tourism Sector Strategy. So we think with that projected growth rate, the trended revenue targets, and we are aware of the issues being discussed around what is an appropriate measure for revenue targets. Do you include other things and not other things? Is it net or et cetera? We are aware of those, but broadly, all revenue targets are impacted positively by the base growth rate over a 10-year period. So the trend revenue targets positively impacted, and hence bearing an element of feasibility inside them. So again, in terms of our advice to the portfolio committee, is unless the department comes up with compelling reasons to drop the target for 2020, we haven't found, according to our projections, any reason to reduce or temper with the target for on trended revenue to what they were expecting for 2020. But if they say, no, we think we're going to exceed based on now the growth that we're beginning to see, then the portfolio committee should welcome that. But if it's about a reduction, there is no reason from our modeling that suggests that the target needs to be lowered. The final one is where we've found quibbles with most of the items that we could classify as tourism. We found that they're more pro-urban in terms of overall impact. So the pro-urban impact of tourism growth is also final consumption increase more for urban than rural households. Both income and price effects is a problematic one. And we think there the revised strategy should perhaps focus more on social objectives around poverty reduction. And why we say that is because if you're talking about poverty reduction in South Africa, you cannot address poverty reduction without addressing rural poverty, because that's where most of the rural people reside. Despite the migrations that have taken place, still the highest incidence of poverty is in rural areas. So if you are going to address that social objective, that objective must talk directly to how one addresses rural poverty. And as we saw from the computations around income and price effects, more of the tourism components are pro-urban relative to pro-rural in terms of final consumption. And that's an issue that we think the portfolio committee could raise. But on the efficiency aspects, GDP, revenue, etc., we think no need to temper with the strategy unless it is raising the target. But on the social aspect, issues to deal with. So those are the main lessons from our side around your first request. Then on the second request about adequacy of budgets, the answer will become clearer from what my colleagues are going to say around departmental budget analysis and the performance of the department. But just to say, the commission relies on what we call a costed norms approach. In other words, coming up with detailed cost functions to attain a certain given output. We don't have those cost functions for tourism at the moment. But what the method tells us is that if there's a disjuncture between your spending and your performance, then the first task before you address adequacy of the budget should not be whether my allocation is adequate or inadequate, but to close the discrepancy between spending and performance. So if you are spending 99% of your allocation but only achieving 80% of your performance target, even before we talk adequacy, the suggestion would be, even before we come with costed norms, numbers for tourism, which is a long-term project, close that gap between performance and spending, because if you spend all of your budget, you must meet all of your targets within the APP. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll ask my two colleagues to take us through the budget analysis and then the performance analysis.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon again, Chair, members of the committee and other colleagues. I will take you through our analysis of the department's spending and MTS projections over a 7-year period from 2012-13 up until the end of the 2016 MTS period, which is 2018. So, as we know, in 2009, tourism was delinked from environmental affairs and established as a standalone department with the overarching mandate of promoting not only the growth and development of the sector, but also entrenching the practice of responsible tourism. The department's spending activities are categorized around four programs, namely administration, policy and knowledge services, international tourism, and your domestic tourism program. Key priorities over the 2016 MTF period include developing new tourism attractions, supporting rural enterprises, and growing domestic tourism. This slide provides an overview of total departmental spending between 2012 and 2015, as well as projected spending over the 2016 MTF period. And what we see is that the department's budget for 2016-17 is $2 billion. And that represents a real growth of around 7% from the previous year, 2015-16. Now, the main driver of growth for that in 2016-17 is your domestic tourism program, and more specifically the activities within that program around EPWP and the introduction of a new spending area in support of rural enterprises. What we note, though, is that over the outer 2 years of the 2016 MTF period, the allocation to the department is projected to decline by 3% in 2017 and then marginally by under 1% in 2018. What this figure does is give us an idea of how the department plans to prioritize its spending, especially over your 2016 MTF period. And what we see is that over the entire period reviewed, the Policy and Knowledge Services Program, or Program 2, consumes the bulk of the department's budget. When we reach 2018-19, it's projected that this program will be allocated 65% of the department's budget. One of the reasons that this is the biggest program is because the departmental transfers to the entity sits under this program. We also note a spike in the proportion of the budget allocated to this program in 2015-16, and that was mainly due to the introduction of the tourism incentive program, which aims to provide assistance to SMMEs. This slide looks at departmental spending by economic classification, so looking at spending in terms of your transfers and subsidies, business services, compensation of employees and payments for capital assets. And what we note is that over the 2016 MTF period, all these items are projected to decline, and that's largely due to, for example, in the case of compensation of employees, it's the result of cabinet-approved reductions to lower the aggregate expenditure ceiling, as well as other cost containment measures that have been implemented. Chief, the following slide provides an overview of the department's transfers to its entity, South African Tourism. And what we see is that over the 2016 MTF period, the department will allocate $3.2 billion to this entity. But when we look at the trends, what we see is that following a real annual average growth of 3.2% in allocations to the entity between 2012 and 2015, allocations to the entity are projected to decline marginally over the 2016 MTF period. And the marginal decline is most likely the result of your contraction in your overall tourism budget. If I can hand over to my colleagues to take us through the annual report.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, and good afternoon, honorable members and colleagues. So this section basically will go take us through the annual report analysis for the department for 2015-16 financial year. Now, when we looked at, or when we assessed the spending performance of the department, what we did was we looked at the spending performance in 2015-16, and we compared the spending performance of the department in 15-16 with 14-15 the year before. And what we observed was that there's been a marginal improvement from 98.4% in 2014-15 to 99.1% in 2015-16. So there has been an improvement, but there's still some underspending by the department. And the main reasons for the underspending related to implementation of cost containment measures by National Treasury. There was underspending on the tourism incentive program, and then also there was exchange rate fluctuations when payments were made. So those are the main reasons for the underspending by the department. Now, moving on to the assessment of the performance targets, and this was for the 2015-16 financial year. We looked at the performance targets for the department as a whole, but also we looked at each of the programs to assess the achievement of performance targets by the department. And what we found was that the department achieved 86% of its performance targets in 2015-16. Now, our assessment is that this generally a close alignment between the targets that have been met as well as the budget that has been spent, suggesting that performance indicators closely aligned with the work volume of the department's and hence resource allocation. And our assessment of this is in relation to other departments that we've looked at where the variances have been in the order of, say, 30% or even bigger. So this department's the variances are relatively small in comparison to other departments. The performance indicators are generally well developed and in most instances comply with the SMART principle that is prescribed by National Treasury. However, our assessment is that there's still room for improvement. So going on to the next slide, and here we go into a bit more detail with respect to identifying some of the areas where the department can improve on. So some of the indicators, especially under the administration program, use percentages instead of numbers. This creates vagueness as it's not possible to tell how targets were measured. So for example, in the department's annual report, they have targets such as 100% achievement of workplace skills plan. Now, from an oversight point of view, it's not actually clear what is meant by 100%. What did the department do that allowed it to achieve 100%? And from an oversight point of view, we would want clarity on what was actually taken, what steps were taken for the department to actually implement this particular activity for it to be able to achieve 100%. Otherwise, it creates vagueness and one isn't quite sure how the department actually went about measuring this. And many other indicators are similar to this one in the administration program for the department. Some indicators are not specific and lack an output. So, for example, there's one indicator in the department's report that states, department, cabinet, and cluster coordination protocol reviewed and implemented. So this is an activity, but it doesn't tell us what was the actual output at the end of the day. Was the report compiled? How was it actually implemented? And that's actually what we want to measure. We're not so much worried about the actual activity. We want to know what was the output of the activity and was that output achieved or not. Some indicators of the department have no targets. So there's an example such as universal access awareness health. Now, this is a target. This is in the department's report. As a target, but it's not actually a target because it doesn't tell us what was the nature of the awareness that was held and how many awareness campaigns, if it was campaigns, was held. So if you look at the nature of the awareness raising, was it workshops that was held? Was it flyers that the department distributed? what was the actual output that the department carried out, and how many of those were carried out? Also, we found that some performance indicators and targets are inconsistent. For example, there's a target performance indicator that reads number of capacity building initiatives at supporting sector transformation. And that the target for this indicator is executive program to capacitate black women managers developed. So the one is talking about the number of capacity building initiatives, and the other one is talking about a program that has been developed. So there's an inconsistency in terms of what the performance indicator is saying and what the target is trying to measure. So and the department indicates that it actually achieved the indicator. So if you have this inconsistency, how do you decide whether the indicator was achieved or not? We also found that sometimes there were duplication of strategic objectives across cross programs. And one such example that we found across three of the four programs was on capacity building. So three of the four programs have activities or outputs that relate to capacity building. But each program is implementing these capacity programs in isolation without any semblance of coordination from the way that we've looked at it. So each one has got capacity building programs, but it doesn't seem like there's coordination across these three programs in terms of capacity building. And if the objective of the department is to expand capacity building in the sector, its focus on capacity actual capacity building is commendable, but it also needs to play a leadership role in terms of rolling out capacity building in a sector throughout the country. Now, moving on to transfer payments, besides the African tourism entity that falls under the department's budget, the department also makes transfer payments to non-governmental organizations, universities, as well as other agencies such as your Gauteng Tourism Authority. And from our assessment, in many instances, the transferred funds to these agencies were either underspent or not spent at all. So, for example, the transfer payment to the IDC was in the order of 30 million rand, but none of those funds were spent. Now, underspending of the transfers to these agencies relate largely to the tourism incentive program, and this raises a concern for us because it indicates that we need to look at whether the timing of the transfers allows these agencies sufficient time to actually spend those transfers. Also, a further concern relates to whether the department has proper mechanisms in place to properly monitor the spending of these transfer payments. So, Madam Chair, just some concluding remarks with respect to our analysis. Despite constrained environment, tourism contribution to GDP and employment is projected to increase in 2016. This is largely because of a weak exchange rate, which makes South Africa an attractive tourist destination for tourists. Now, while the national Department of Tourism's budget grows by 2 billion rand in 2016. Over the rest of the 2016 MTF period, we note that the allocation to the department is projected to decline by 3% in 2017-18 and by 0.76% in 2018-2019. Now, the committee should inquire from the department about the reasons for the underspending on the tourism incentive program, as no clear explanation was provided in the annual report, and secondly, whether proper monitoring and reporting mechanisms are in place to monitor the spending of transferred funds to NGOs, universities, as well as agencies. Madam Chair, those are the concluding remarks. We've got one recommendation that we included from our submission that we've made for the Division of Revenue for 2017-2018, and this relates to the public employment programs, which are your community works program and your expanded public work program. Now, the department is implementing for job creation initiatives through EPWP, so we thought this particular recommendation could be relevant for the department. And this recommendation is essentially saying that given that the funding for public employment programs is insufficient to cover all unemployed who qualify for these programs, focus should be based on giving unemployed individuals without access to grant priority. And here what we found was that there's a significant share of participants on these public employment programs that are either on a social grant or employed elsewhere, and government should also carefully balance the need to improve the conditions of employment and expanding public employment programs. Now, currently government is in the process of responding to these recommendations, and government's response to this recommendation will be tabled in the Division of Revenue Bill for 2017-2018 next year, February. On that note, I will just hand over to Dr. Ramos Mapugu, who will then just close our presentation.
Thank you very much. I'm not going to say anything. The members are going to ask questions and clarity seeking points as well. Over to you, Honourable Members, Honourable Krumbok.
Has anyone so far?
Honourable Adam, Honourable Kaiko, Honourable Kabekundu, all of you, Honourable Bego.
Thank you, Chair, and I apologize for my late arrival. I did contact Jerry yesterday to warn him I'd be 20 minutes late. Thank you so much. It's very difficult to know what to make of this report. I got the constant feeling all the way through that they were leading up to something which never quite came. You know, it's almost as if one wanted something that jumped out at you, and yet I never really got that impression. A lot of figures were spoken about and a lot of fairly complex language was used, but I still don't really get a better idea of what the crisp points are that the FFC wants to make. But having said that, maybe it'll come through in the discussion. Can I just raise four issues? The issues about the annual report analysis. Now, I mean, I'm not jumping on the presenter, I think he drew a short straw to that. But some of this about, you know, looking at misalignment between targets and indicators and saying that things aren't particularly clear, it didn't really seem to me the single most important thing that this committee should consider. And I did get the impression on one or two occasions, for example, on the first slide on slide 12, it was more about nitpicking than actual substantive stuff. So I read it three times, and I listened very carefully when the presenter spoke, and I'm looking at the top one on page 12. This is my first question, where the performance indicators, number of capacity building initiatives at supporting sector transformation. Now, I mean, we cut through all the political correctness, we all know what that means, and it's a very worthy objective. The target, or one of the targets for that executive program, to capacitate black women managers. Now, I cannot actually see how those two are inconsistent. Because if you're going to transform the sector and build capacity, surely capacitating black women, who are the most historically disadvantaged by apartheid, is one of the first things you have to do. So it seems to me that that particular target is precisely what is intended by the performance indicator, and it's not inconsistent at all. But perhaps I'm missing the point, and perhaps it's one of many targets, but if it is one of many targets, then I would have thought those are the kind of targets one would actually want to implement or set in order to reach the performance indicator of capacity building supporting sector transformation. So that could just be clarified, because that seemed to me to be incorrect. It is consistent, not inconsistent, as has been pointed out. then more substantially on the figures, I really found this very, very hard in some cases to reconcile some slides to others. Can I just go to one which is maybe my lack of knowledge, and perhaps it can just be explained to me. The last slide on page 6, and the very last point in point 2, it talks about the fact that there is going to be a moderation of growth, and then it lists four factors. High base volumes, for sure. If you're starting off a low base, you're going to start to even out over time. Lower GDP growth, we all know that. We had the minister explain that to us last week. Another one I don't understand. Lower elasticity of travel to GDP. Okay, I know what elasticity is of demand. What it means is the sensitivity of that particular variable that you're measuring is not as great as a variable compared to something else that you're measuring. So what they're talking about here is when GDP increases or decreases, it doesn't really affect the output, which in this particular case is travel. So when you do economics, one of the things they tell you is one of the things that got the lowest elasticity of demand is salt. Because you're going to buy salt regardless of the state of the economy, regardless of your household finances. It's something you have to have. It's an essential. It doesn't have a complementary product. And it's a relatively low price. So salt is an inelastic thing as opposed to other things which are very elastic. But if that's the case, then what we're actually saying is that if GDP growth is slowing down, it isn't going to have a marked effect on tourism, because that's what non-elasticity means. An inelastic demand curve by consumers for tourism means that as GDP slows down, you're still getting a relatively stable contribution from tourism. So I just need that explained to me, because it seems to work either way. If you have a declining economic growth or accelerating economic growth, what it means is it's a constant almost. If it's very, very inelastic and less of a constant, but nevertheless fairly stable if it's slightly less inelastic. So I didn't understand that point. It seemed to be contradictory. Now, if I can just go to the other points on the third and fourth last point, Chairperson. Our budget, a couple of years ago, the national budget presented by the finance minister, just over R1 trillion. I mean, is that everyone? We all agree on that, don't we? Just over R1 trillion, right? I'm looking at you. Just over R1 trillion.
1.2.
1.2 trillion. And Praveen Gordhan, when he first got to that mark, he asked the House to applaud. It was the first time that South Africa had a R1 trillion budget. And the budget is roughly one-third of GDP. I mean, that's the government's take of the national GDP is about 31 or 32%. Please correct me if I'm wrong. So if I look at page 6, and I look at the first slide there, in the second point, it says tourism growth has a significant effect on the national economy growth rate. I think it meant economic growth rate, but anyway, contributing 2.5% of total GDP. 2.5%. In the next one, it says the annual growth rate is 4.1% of the tourism sector, impacting positively on the rest of the economy. I think this committee's always understood the value of tourism to the national economy. I.e., it says, that is, 1 billion additional value added in constant 2013 South African rand in non-tourism sectors. Now, 1 billion out of 1.2 trillion is less than 0.1%. So, math is correct. Now, that's not significant. I'm just wondering if that is a mistake, whether it's supposed to be another figure. 1 billion doesn't sound very much when you take the budget. Alone is just over R1 billion. It must be some other figure. Okay, now we go back to page 3. And I'm sorry this is such a statistical input chair, but when the numbers don't add up to me, I start to get worried. Okay. All right. There's a third point. It says gross domestic product, increased tourism contribution. This is now FCC's interpretation of the National Tourism Sector Strategy Targets. Okay. There's increased tourism's contribution to the GDP from an estimated 189 billion to 499 billion. There's no problem with that. Okay, but the subpoint under that is the contribution of domestic tourism GDP to grow to 60% from 52%. Now, what is meant by that? Because if you look at what we talked about in page 6, GDP in this country is 3 trillion rand, somewhere around there, something above that. Tourism is not 60% of that. Does that mean something else? Is it contribution of domestic tourism to something else but not GDP? Because it says contribution of domestic tourism to GDP to grow to 60% from 52. The contribution of domestic tourism to our economy is not 52%, because that would make it something like 1.5 trillion rand, and it's nothing like that. The previous thing talks about 189 billion, not trillion. One tenth of that going to 0.5 trillion. So I have a lot of difficulty with some of these numbers, and perhaps it's just the way it's phrased, but in order to understand your whole report, I need to understand those discrepancies, because I can't get past that and then interpret the rest of your report in terms of that. Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you for the presentation. My questions are on the for the FFC. The first is on slide 6 under job creation. If you could explain to me the aims are to create 2,000 to 5,000 jobs by 2020. But you say 177,000 in the tourism sector and 48 through direct government investment. What do you mean by direct government investment? Then, Chairperson, on page slide 24, transfer payment. The FFC says there is an underspending of transfers related to the TIP. And they then say this raises a concern about the timing of the transfers and if agencies were if the agencies were given sufficient time to spend the money. Now, if you say you are concerned about the timing of the transfers, can you come up with a suggestion? When would be the appropriate time to do transfers? And so that the, and what would you say would be sufficient time for the agencies to spend the money? And then you say a further concern is a mechanism. Be more specific about what mechanism you would suggest for the spending of the money. You went through the annual report and you say we must ask questions about the reasons for the underspending. What would you say are the reasons? Because you went through it. What would you say are the reasons for the underspending? Would you say it's capacity or what? Then on the Auditor General, you made assumption that the EPWP expenditure must, they must get it right. But you know, Auditor General, that the spending of the EPWP funds in every department, this is highlighted as a problem. I cannot say every, on the two departments which I am engaging with, tourism and public works. And public works is the custodian of the EPWP program. Now, can you come up with a suggestion to make it easier for the department? I know there's always this paper trace, but we are living in a technology era. Can you come up with suggestions how this EPW hoha can be smoothed out? And you know, EPWP programs are at local government level, where we have often capacity problems. So how can you smooth that out?
And the other thing is, how do one go about to say, to select people that doesn't get grants? You say people that that receive grants mustn't. When social development say you can enhance your grants, and do you think that the rate per day is enough? And the last one, Chairperson. This foreign currency problem of FAT, the depreciation of the currency, that problem that they have, what suggestions will you make as Auditor General Office for them to smooth out this thing? It's not enough to engage with Treasury about it. How can they overcome this problem? Thank you, Chairperson, for your indulgence.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is to the FFC. Just a clarification, a concern, actually. When one listens to the presentation touching on slide 8, that agriculture is increasing growth. It's the hope, according to the graph, it shows it is going up. Chairperson, my understanding of what is happening at the agriculture, although there are certain fields where agriculture is being exposed to, but my take is on the private developers that are taking most of agricultural land currently, by so doing, taking away employment from the farm workers who are actually part of contributing some way, somehow, to the growth of food security, as well as putting food on the table for their families. If then FFC says agriculture is growing, did they look into the challenge of the land that is being squeezed, agricultural land that is being squeezed by development, as well as the mines that are sort of taking most of agricultural land and are polluting even the water that we have in our country? That's all, Chairperson, I wanted just to raise. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me first appreciate the both presentations, and also to confirm the color blindness of the presenter. But he must not take the blame. The blame goes to the great art teacher, where the issue of color starts. Coming closely to the presentation, Chair, we note what you have already noted on the improvement by the department. Sometimes you are advising us on things that we have already noticed as people who are doing oversight over the department. But it's good that we agree on certain issues, because it means as a portfolio committee there is something that we are doing right, and also confirming that there is also something that yourselves are doing right. Good people, I just want to check if I was hearing you correctly when you were talking about samples. Are you doing samples, or are you auditing each and every program of the department? Because you highlighted program 2, program 3, which I thought you would talk about overall. I was happy to hear that you also have responses
from the department. It means they were able to respond to whatever you raised in the management letters, because they are not here. You are to have them on Friday, but you are able to give us. It means between you and them, there has been a communication. On the issue of the EPWP project, we've been, since the start of this parliament, we've been raising this concern on the accountability of the department about this EPWP program. Though we are not saying no to them, they are good. At least they are responding to some challenges down there, but they must be able to report on them. As a committee, I can say you did get my buy-in on the issue of following up on the actions, on the action plan of the department, because there are some commitments made by our political leadership there in the department. We are to follow up on the action plans as a committee. I can make that commitment. Coming to the second presentation by FFC, one is tempted to say something on the last page, which is page 29, around the issue of EPWP again, when we were saying something about the people receiving, the unemployed and the people receiving grants and whatever. Don't you suggest on a means test to be conducted, because you can get a social grant, but you do not get out of that poverty line, because of the, you may have that grant and you have a bigger family, you stay in one household. Can't you suggest on a means test to be undertaken? And also, your advice, your what you just noted on the late transfers by the department, that's what we've been advising them on, not to dump money to those entities and those NGOs, because you also noted the underspending and not spending at all by some of them. Otherwise, we take note of all your recommendations. Thank you, Chair. Now, thanks, Chair. I'm the last speaker. Let me just appreciate the presentation, all of you, but the last presenter, I think on the assessment of performance targets, I think you just assist the committee on target 2 and 3, assist the committee to just follow up where the money is, because I think that is very important, and on your conclusion as well, although the members are just worried about the EPWPs, but on your conclusion, I think you just gave us an indication that for us to empower us as a committee how to follow up the money. I think that is all I needed to comment. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much to both Auditor General and FSC. Maybe the Office of the Auditor General, you will appreciate the reason why we would like a performance audit. We say that because when we do oversight, there is much factor around performance. So they felt like to get some inkling of the performance audit. FFC, maybe you can share with us what is it that you can do around the currency fluctuations in South African tourism, because they market the country. And in the market, everything goes according to the dollar. And when the rand has depreciated, there's a big gap that you get. So in such instances, what role can you play between Treasury, the department, and yourself, just to try to look into that particular aspect? As for spending, and particularly transfers, because the issue of transfers is not quite so clear. Some of the transfers are given towards the end of the financial year, but those transfers that are given during the course of the year, it's not stated how far do those transfers report back. We are not sure how much, how they spend those transfers. And the department is quite mum on that one, and it's quite a big issue. But I'm opening for, thank you for the presentations, and can we be responsible? Thank you.
In any order.
Okay. If I can start, I'll pick up on ones that we can address, and the other ones that we can't address, I will say why that is the case. Maybe I should preface my response by saying once again that we are an instrument of this portfolio committee. We are a tool. When you look at our role and function in the system, we are somebody that responds to you when you say, can you brief us? So the intention of today's briefing was to assist you with your BRRR report. According to our mandate, we are not implementers. We do not implement, the department implements. So what we were doing here was to point the portfolio committee to questions to ask to the department when you sit with the department on its own to say the following issues were raised. What is the department doing about that? And if the department has credible answers, then we are all happy, because that's the purpose of our advisor. We are not here to nail the department or anything like that, but to assist the portfolio committee with asking the pointed questions for the department to respond towards. And we do that because you've requested for us to come and brief the portfolio committee ahead of its meeting with the department. So the implementation questions, we are not mandated to respond to those. The department knows much better and is the right institution to be responding to those. Now, starting with the first set of questions, a lot of them were detailed type questions. And what I can suggest is, if time permits, is perhaps that we do a methodological briefing for this portfolio committee, where we go through each and every statistic that has been queried, and we give our explanations. So, for example, when one picks up on the end result of all the interactions that have taken place amounting to around $1 billion, a lot of things are coming into that calculation, the most important of which is we've put in sector constraints across the whole economy that you often don't take into account when you look just at the size of your perceived tourism and say it should therefore end up as some magnitude. For us, we take, this is an economy-wide model where resources get transferred from other sectors to come and contribute to a sector that is going up, etc., etc. So out of all those interactions that have taken place, and we can trace each one of them to why we come up with a small number at the end of it. In large part, our numbers are much less optimistic, smaller than the type of numbers that you see out there. But that's because we impose a lot of constraints onto our modeling. Then on the low elasticity of travel to GDP, the key point that we're making there was that when you look at the national tourism sector strategy, it was premised on certain elasticities about the relations, about foreign GDP, that if global growth picks up, that spills into the number of arrivals. What we see now, because of other issues, including terrorism, including disturbances on the international scene, is that the travel elasticity to GDP has shifted to become lower. So what we are saying is this is one thing to take into account in reviewing NTFS, because when the National Tourism Sector Strategy was put in place, it made certain assumptions about the travel to GDP elasticity. And that elasticity has changed quite a lot given current global development. And so the purpose for raising that was, if that happens and we run our model, it has a big impact on how soon you can attain the goal, the targets as set in the National Tourism Sector Strategy. So yeah, the other things around statistics, those I suggest that we have a methodological discussion where we bring our spreadsheets, our models, and we can go through each number and how we do that. We didn't think that was the purpose for today. We thought the purpose for today was to sift high-level issues for this committee that they can then use. But we don't have a problem coming to have a methodological discussion with the committee. Then, Honorable Adams, you ask about direct government, what we mean by direct government investment as contribution to the jobs. The job creation target comes from both private and public sector. So when we say direct government investment, these are the EPWP, CWP strategies that come directly from the budget that we're talking about, as distinct from the sector, the whole sector on its own. So that was the direct investment that government makes to jobs that we are talking about. Then again, coming back to the first question on whether we are nitpicking. Let me again preface on why we are here. We would rather nitpick than not nitpick and something becomes a problem 2 months down the line, where we haven't raised an issue with the department budgets and annual report. So we would rather be nitpicking, go through everything that raises even one single hair in us to say to the portfolio committee, hey, when we did the analysis you asked us, this we are not sure about. Can you ask the department to explain? If it's a trivial thing, as I said, we should all be happy that it's a trivial thing. But maybe it's not a trivial thing. Maybe it can turn out to be an issue. And the whole exercise of oversight is that's exactly what you want, to avoid being surprised down the line. So we've gone through everything. If some of the issues are nitpicking, the department will respond to the portfolio committee around the questions that we've raised and give you answers that will satisfy yourselves. And then back to that was the comment that we know these things. And again, it's a very good thing. A good property of good methodology is what's called cross-triangulation. So if what you found out can be triangulated and confirmed by somebody else working independently, and in this case, were an independent institution created by the constitution, answerable only to parliament, pretty much here. If you can get that kind of cross triangulation with FSC, with other institutions, then it means the methodology that the portfolio committee is utilizing is very solid. But presumably the whole reason why you ask us to come is in fact to check your intuition, that are we on the right track? Yes. So it's a good thing if we have a meeting of minds. Some other time we may not have a meeting of minds. And it's not a bad thing if the whole purpose of cross-triangulation, and I think it's a methodology that the portfolio committee should continue using, that it's not just about what we find on our oversight, but we have to ask other, not arms, but other tools that we have. In this particular case, FFC working in your own world without even dealing directly with the department, what have you found? And by the way, the department has got exactly the same rights as this portfolio committee to request our advice on certain matters. They haven't requested our advice on any of the matters here, which is why we haven't shared this report with them, because this report was at the request of portfolio committee on tourism. And here is where we are saying these are some of the issues that we have picked up from what you have requested us to do, and you can use that to hear what the answers from the department are going to be. So once again, Honorable Adam, the specifics on transfer payments, for example, what is our recommendation on timing? That is falling outside of our mandate. But what we're raising is portfolio committee, check the timing of the transfers. Is it fiscal dumping? If the department says, no, it's not fiscal dumping, we did it for the following reasons, and you're satisfied with those reasons, then the point I said, this purpose. It's not for the commission to recommend or to interfere with the department when deciding on when to transfer a payment. There are certain guidelines around when transfers should be made, when do you call something a match spike, etc. But it's not within our mandate to be making a recommendation around that particular aspect. So, yes, a lot of the questions not that we are uncomfortable with them, we're very comfortable with them, but they are the type of questions that the department is better placed to be answering. The methodological questions, yes, we can deal with those, but we didn't feel today was a methodological briefing. And that's why we haven't brought our spreadsheets or the models that we have used to build up all our scenarios. But we can do that at the request of the portfolio committee. And we know that statisticians, finance people, and economists always have these tech battles around numbers adding up and why they are not adding up. We can have that discussion on a given day. A lot of my numbers here are not ex post analysis. They are results of a process having worked its way through. And if the model behind the numbers is not explained upfront on how it works, then it will be difficult to agree on any number. But we can go into that kind of discussion. Yes, I don't know, colleagues.
If there's no further input from the rest of the FFC, can I raise a point of order? Okay. That's fine.
Thanks, Chair. I'll respond to the issues that we have posed, and I would really appreciate it if the honourable members point to us if there's any question that we actually left out. Firstly, Chair, there's a number of issues that revolves around the area of the EPWP. If you can go back to the year before 1314, the way in which the EPWP was accounted for, it was accounted for directly as a transfer by the department, which meant that the entity needed to have controls to ensure that they get reports from the implementing agents, which in that case they would then be complying with Section 381J of the PFMA. Then later on, in that particular year, there were certain exemptions and deviations that were granted by the department, which is National Treasury, due to the complexity of some of the accounting treatments that were involved in accounting for EPWP. So just to make sure that whoever's got EPW projects running, they don't get qualified because of that. Therefore, what the auditors would do, they would emphasize that matter in the audit report, but not qualified because there was not full compliance with all the provisions of that applicable accounting standard. The intentions were good, but it came with unintended consequences then, because what had happened was relying on the exemptions and the deviations and things like those, then the internal control part fell foul of the process. In other words, nobody holds the implementing agent to account for those records and documents on a continuous basis and things like those. Then that is why in the prior financial year, there was a change to say, now you will account for what is paid, yes, but also account for what is on the ground, which necessitated then that you need to go and get all these documents that support what you are saying is on the ground. So those were the engagements that were ongoing between the departments that are involved in the EPWP with the National Treasury. Fortunately for the department NDT at this stage, because they managed to get us all the supporting documents in that regard. Hence, they didn't have any issues in that particular area. But we still have issues that we're going to engage with them going forward, because as I said, it's a number of issues that are involved. One, you've got the accounting part. Two, you've got the predetermined objective part, where you say, is this achieving the intended mandate? In other words, the whole purpose of this particular thing is not just to get a building and a few people working there, but is to make sure that, in line with the memorandum of agreement, these jobs are split. For an example, if you say so many percent of those people that I'm employing should be women, certain percentage should be youth, certain percentage should be people with disabilities, and so on and so forth. So then what needs to come out of that is, are these projects sustainable? You don't want to build a building. Everybody was employed when the building was taking place. Then thereafter, you've got a vacant building lying there, and nobody's utilizing it for one. Secondly, it's costing somebody to look after it, where else it's not generating any revenues for anybody in the sector. So those are the engagements you still need to have. So for us, the accounting part, that's why when my colleague presented, spoke about the fair presentation part. We're still happy with the fair presentation, be it in the APP, the reliability and the credibility of the information. Now we need to move or shift the gear forward now to say, now let's look at what were the intended purposes for this particular EPWP. Because you don't want to create, to have this false notion of saying I'm creating employment, whereas you're creating a 3-month employment just to build a building. After that, there are no jobs. But you want sustainability in the process. So on the spending part, there will be an increased audit from the Auditor General side, mainly because of the modified cash standard, which requires more to be done now. which was not required previously. Previously, you just accounted for transfer payment. Then what we come in and we do is we check whether it's transferred to the relevant people. You have the supporting documentation and the reports that they've provided you. But now what happens is, as part of the selection process, select certain EPWP projects and go and inspect whether, for one, buildings are completed, buildings serve the intended purposes, there are people who are indeed employed, there were skills that were developed in this whole process. So that's where this thing is get towards. Then on the issue of the capacity problems, I think from where we're sitting, the department, from the side of the department, there is no requirement either from the PFMA or any of the MOA to say the department is responsible for building capacity at local government. That's, I'm assuming, Honourable Member, that we are referring to on the project management side, because that is where we actually picked up a lot of issues. To say, yes, funds are dispersed. Now go and look whether what has been dispersed is equal to what I'm seeing on the ground. In other words, you've paid the full amount, but when you go to the ground, you find out a structure. Then for me, there's a disjunction. That is a big problem. So that's where the issue is, to say, the department, from now on, they need to follow stringent processes to ensure that before you pay, you've made sure that there is proper processes to make sure that you're paying for something that is on the ground, to avoid a situation where a payment is made in full, but still the project is incomplete. Then the issue of how do we go about getting it right? For me, it's a simple thing of saying the first issue that needs to be put in place is the processes. If you've got no internal control processes in place, then you are bound to have problems later on. It shouldn't be something that you think of when you have to exercise your responsibilities. In other words, when I have to process a payment today, then I start thinking of those things. There should be something in place that says for EPWP, before you process a payment, this is the checklist. You need to have a specialist, whether be it a quantity surveyor or somebody who's going to go to the ground and say, the amount that these guys are claiming is in excess of what I've seen on the ground. Instead of giving them that, my professional experience tells me you should be paying them half of what they request. So there should be stringent processes along those lines. So it's a process issue. It's a process that needs to be addressed just to make sure that as and when the payments are being made, correct progress payments are made up until the point where we can say the building is completed at the correct amount, and when you go to the ground, you can actually find an existing structure and not an incomplete structure. On the suggestions to the department, I think it's just a matter of putting in the correct processes in place, internal controls, to make sure that before payments are made, there's somebody that inspects what's on the ground. But most importantly, you know, unannounced site visits work. Because somebody can tell you these are the processes that we have in place. But as to whether these processes are working throughout the year is another story. They may work when you are there because they knew you were coming all along. But if you just pitch up without anybody knowing, that's why you're going to pick up on whether there's some corners cutting when you're not around. So those are some of the suggestions that we actually engaging on, and we'll be having further engagements with the department with regard to some of these issues. Then on the issue of raised by the Honourable Member on the auditing samples, when you look at the predetermined objectives, we don't audit the whole set of predetermined objectives. We do indeed select certain ones that we look at. Then the following year, we select certain ones that we look at. Administration, for an example, is one of those that we don't look at completely. And the reason why we're actually doing that is just to make sure that from the focus perspective, we look at auditing what matters. However, just to allude to what the chair said earlier on, when the chair said we're requesting a performance audit, there's an issue that I want to put on the table here. When we audit the credibility and the reliability of the information that has been reported on. Now, you'd find that you've given an entity a couple of millions of rands. Then they're going to be saying, on these millions of rands that you've given us, we're going to deliver 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Us as auditors, if the department said to us, yes, we got a million rand, but we delivered 1, 2, 3 because of the following reasons, we're going to stop right there. We're not going to go on and probe further to say, for an example, since you've delivered half of what we're supposed to achieve, where's the rest of the funds? We're not going to do that. But we are just going to report in the audit report and say, for the deliverables on the APP of this particular entity, you can go to page so-and-so, to page so-and-so. The reason being, we had instances previously when we had engagement with departments which said or suggested that it's not that we don't want to deliver, we really want to deliver, but if you, AG, come and say, when you've delivered 75% of what you wanted to deliver, it's not on. I mean, everybody knows 75% at university level is a distinction. And UAG is saying we failed. Whereas we're not saying anybody failed. We're just saying, be mindful that you didn't achieve your objectives, whereas you've spent all the amount that was allocated to you. For us as the auditors, there's a disjuncture there. You need to have answers as to why you didn't achieve. That's one. Secondly, since you didn't achieve, where did the rest of the funds go? So those were the issues that we're raising, and that brought us a lot of debates, discussions, disagreements, up to a point where the AG said, you know what, it's fine. We're going to engage on a process where we'll go and speak to National Treasury. Once the engagement with Treasury has happened, to find out the state of readiness for the whole of South Africa to report on PDM predetermined objectives, drilling them down to the service delivery issues. Once we issue that performance report or audit report, or we do that assessment and we agree that the country is ready, then we're going to start reporting on those, and where the entities fail to achieve the objectives, we're going to qualify the audit report. So that hasn't been implemented yet. The engagements are still ongoing because of a number of reasons. And mainly some of the reasons are, when we talk of these maturity levels of the whole of the country, it doesn't just revolve around reporting now. It revolves around how are these objectives structured towards making sure that we deliver based on the National Development Plan. The issue of having as an objective an indicator that says we're going to have 4 meetings should be an issue of the past. 4 meetings means nothing. We can sit here and have coffee and record that we had 4 meetings. But the issue is, what came out of the 4 meetings? What are the implementation plans that are resulting from these 4 meetings that we had? Did these 4 meetings that we had result in something that is actionable that needs to be followed up going forward? If I produce a particular report, entities will say we'll produce 6 reports. The question is not only about the 6 reports. The question is about what are the recommendations of the 6 reports? And how to implement the recommendations of this report. So there's a whole lot that is happening in the background that will be coming forward to address or discuss with the committee in terms of what are the issues that we're picking up and how can we enhance perhaps by providing support to the committees in terms of exercising their oversight in that particular area. Thanks, Chair. I don't know whether there's something that I left out. Do you want to add something?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I just want to talk about, I think the Honourable Member asked about the how do we ensure that we don't employ people with grants. I think that one, maybe perhaps, it's something then that needs to be looked at in terms of maybe what was the purpose of EPWP. Was it to say perhaps people that are receiving social grants shouldn't be hired, or maybe shouldn't be employed? Or should be excluded, and maybe if then they should be excluded, then I think maybe perhaps as part of the internal controls, like my colleagues have said, maybe then the department that needs to actually implement, one of the things would be the demand of social development as well, because they've got the database of the people that are receiving social grants. But I think what is important is to look at the objectives. Are they supposed to be excluded or not? Going to the matter of FET, I think on the FET, the exchange rate of FET, I think it's one of the commitments that we put to the minister there in terms of, because I think in terms of the PFMA, the FET is a Schedule 3A public entity. And then the PFMA has got certain restrictions there in terms of financial management. There's also, and also the forward exchange contracts, then that they can buy from the bank in order to hedge the rent. Of which then the discussions then that we normally have then with the minister is then to
ask then the Minister of Finance then to find if there can be any alternative arrangements that can go with that. And on our side is the Western Technology, we cannot necessarily prescribe that maybe do this, because maybe when we're saying that buy for the same contract which mitigate the risk of depreciation of rent, the entity or the institution might be then breaching the requirements of the PFMA. And then the minister becomes then a very critical and to ensure that they resolve the issue. I think the FED, you say in the financial statements of that, I think they benefited from the depreciation of the rent due to, I think, most of the cash stayed out of outside of South Africa. So when they're closing then the financial year ends, then they had the foreign exchange gain in the current year. But then the question is that sustainable? Something then that is sustainable, because it's like speculating whether maybe the rent is going to depreciate or appreciate. So it's something then that needs to be looked at. Thank you very much. I think we address, but if there's something that we can address, we appreciate
it. We're recording it.
Thank you.
I'm described as softly spoken somewhere. Yeah, Chair, I'm not happy with FSD's response to our question, because this is not the department's presentation, it's their presentation. And they are making various statements, and it's not for us to go back to the department and say, why did the FSD say this, or why did they say that? Right? I'm in a struggle with you and I both in a book.
No, it's because this may, and then it's off a meeting room. No, the mic is off meeting room.
I know.
It's fine.
Nothing is working.
They won't, okay.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know.
That's fun.
I did, Jerry.
Oh.
Nothing's happening.
Use your lucky voice.
No, I'm doing this. Okay, I'll pretend I'm acting in Parliament. So, here's the thing. I raised the question about the empowerment of historically disadvantaged individuals, black women, and I said that to me is entirely correct, and therefore it's not in contradiction to a key performance indicator, which is to affect transformation across the sector. I haven't had an answer on that. On the numbers, okay? On the numbers, we don't need the FSC to come back and give us another lecture on their methodology, when quite clearly, and I'm going to be less diplomatic, these slides and these figures are contradictory. They actually are contradictory. Because you can't say on slide 6 that tourism's contribution to the economy is, or to GDP, is 2.5%, right? And then say on slide 3 that domestic tourism alone contribution to the economy is 52%. We all know that's rubbish. So I don't need a lecture on methodology for the FSC to explain to me why there is a contradiction, what do they actually mean by that statistic of 52%. They actually should tell us here today, and it's not for us to go back to the Department of Tourism, as has been suggested, and ask them why does SFC see that. And when we talk about the contribution to GDP, when that puts on page 3 that it's grown from 189 billion to 499 billion from 2009 to 2020, or will grow to that by 2020, 189 billion is the direct contribution of tourism to GDP. We all know that there's an indirect contribution as well, and it's roughly doubled. And therefore, it cannot be a 1 billion rand extra, 189 million rand, and then, billion rand, and then 1 billion rand extra, which is the indirect contribution, is not 50-50. It's less than a percent. But that is what they say on slide 6 on the first slide, an extra 1 billion rand additional value. If there is an equal contribution to GDP indirectly, then it should also be around about 189 billion, somewhere around there. So quite frankly, these figures are not correct. They're not even remotely correct. And it's actually inappropriate, with respect, Chair, through you, to come here and tell us that we'll give you another lecture or another presentation about the methodology when we know these figures are not correct. And if you have four slides that contradict each other, it's this committee's job to say, sorry, your figures are not correct. Please explain. I don't want to have to come back 2 weeks later or three, or whenever it is, for them to explain. So I really, through you, I want to put my concern on the record that this presentation has not been internally consistent. The figures are wrong, and when we've asked those questions, we've been told, well, it's the methodology thing, and we'll come back in whatever space it is and explain to you the differences. That is not appropriate from oversight function of this committee. We are conducting oversight over them today, not the other way around. It's not them to test our intuition. Quite frankly, I find that offensive. It is for us to actually interrogate this report, and this report does not stand up to even the most superficial interrogation.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to... I did get the responses. I just wanted to echo the sentiments by yourself, Chair, all the other teams of performance. Why I say so, there are... There's a case with regards to SAT where out of 8 targets, there was only 7 that were met. And I was asking myself, if we did not... the other 7 out of 8...
They met 1.
They met 1, yes. Okay, they met 1. So if we did not trap it and you didn't, what would happen? Because... Where they are target smart, what was happening before, the planning issue now. So that's why it is important for you, if it is within your mind, to do it. I was just going to say that, Chair.
Are there any other responses to the
Yes, Honorable Chair, through you, if... I can just respond directly to the Honourable Member. Yes, so the discrepancies that you are picking up is essentially why I said we needed more time on the methodology. Because this slide that you are comparing, the slide 6, is coming from the National Tourism Sector Strategy. You see, those numbers we haven't invented or modeled them. This is NTSS. The one that you are comparing, the 1 billion to this, is on the basis, as I said, what if we shock tourism by 1%? What would happen? So this is why I'm saying you can't compare slide 6, which is target that National Tourism Sector Strategy has set for itself for 2020, with what we're reporting. So what we're reporting in this slide aren't apples and apples. We've done 1% shock onto the system. But again, as I said, it's that issue where if we had more time to go into the details, but the message that we wanted to communicate was that even with a 1% shock to the sector, it's still driving towards what the NTSS says it's going to drive towards. You could then increase from 1% and say, what if we do 10% increase? We haven't had a chance to do that. We received this invitation last week, and we've only been able to do a simulation of 1% shock, which results in the 1 billion change. The slide the Honorable Member is talking to was just to say this is what MTSS is about. And again, if these numbers are incredible, then the department should be called and they can respond to these particular numbers. Our input for the portfolio committee was that the GDP and the revenue targets appear achievable if we do a 10-year analysis. We are groping towards that. On the social objective, we seem to be moving away from that because the focus in terms of who benefits from household consumption is more urban focused than rural focused, when most of the rural, when most of the poor people that we are seeing reside in rural areas. So that's what we wanted to contribute in terms of interrogating of the strategy. Then on the indicator around transformation, again, the point that we are making is what we are assessing is overall transformation. The target says executive training for women, which is a good thing. We're not disputing that. That it's an element of transformation, but is it the full? So if you do executive training for women, do you say I have achieved 100% transformation, which is the message coming out of the assessment of that target? Probably not, because that's just one element of the transformation charter. And so if you exercise the oversight on transformation in the sector, and you read from the report that executive training for women is saying we've achieved transformation, which is what we're discussing. So those are some of the issues that make the target as full as possible, so that when we say transformation, we know exactly what it is that you're exercising oversight on. Just one of the targets, if it's fully achieved, may not be in tandem with what it is that you're exercising the oversight on. So it's just those nuances. But I think in terms of the general thrust of where you're going, that numbers should be making sense. Is it a case of nitpicking? There are truths in what you're picking up, because here we're not dealing with a basket department at all. In fact, this is one of the departments who are doing very well, and I think to preface that. So what do you do when a department is doing well but you still have to exercise oversight? Then you have to go into if it's nitpicking, then we are very happy at the end that we're just nitpicking. But maybe out of the nitpicking could come something that the portfolio committee could hang on to and improve the working of the department. That's all that we are trying to do with today's briefing.
Thank you very much to both of you. We definitely will call.
Thank you. Yes.